From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
One of the elements between Russia and the United States today, and indeed Russia and Europe today, is the allegation that Russia interfered in elections.
That was NBC News correspondent Megyn Kelly in St. Petersburg, Russia last week, speaking with Russia's President Vladimir Putin at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum.
Mr. Putin, this week you told a French newspaper that Russia is being accused of interfering with the U.S. election by people who lost that election, who don't want to admit defeat. But all 17 of the United States intelligence agencies have concluded that the Russians did interfere with our election. And these are nonpartisan career professionals, Republicans and Democrats alike on Capitol Hill, including President Trump's supporters, and some are your defenders, who have seen the classified intelligence report, have all accepted this conclusion. And even private nonpartisan security firms say the same, that Russia interfered with the U.S. election. Are they all wrong?
Have you read those reports?
I read the unclassified version.
Публичную, общественную версию.
Well, the unclassified version, which is null and void. And who was your tailor? What about the pockets? What about the buttons? Do you have any claims about this suit, about the buttons? No, they are firmly tied, but you can't wear this suit. Can it happen? Yes, it did happen with one of our stand-up comedians, Mr. Aiken. And you've been telling me now about the non-classified versions. I read those reports. Even in those reports, there is no specific evidence, no facts, just assumptions, allegations, and conclusions based on the allegations, nothing more. You know, if there is something specific, concrete, we could discuss that. Like in one of the entities I previously used to work for, they said, we need all the evidence, addresses, all the names and the surnames. Provide all that to us. With respect to independent sources, there are no independent sources in this world. And, you know, the recent appointments with your special services point to the fact that there are any likings, any attitudes. So I believe that we should stop this idle prattle, which is harmful, and I believe this is like transferring the internal political bickering of the United States beyond the borders of the country, outside on the international stage, trying to resolve political matters with the help of the foreign policy tools and national affairs, and that is detrimental to international affairs and the global economy and the issues of global security and fight against terror, which is detrimental. And I have just cited an example when the Washington, D.C. did not recommend the professionals to go to an anti-terrorist event of the Russian Federation, which is nonsense. And these people, these very same people, initiate and are behind those reports. I believe that this should stop as soon as possible. We should start and resume normal cooperation. Well, in addition, I can tell you that worldwide there are not so many countries that have the privilege of sovereignty. I wouldn't like to offend anyone, but what has been said by Madam Merkel is conditioned by the long amassing grudge she's been harboring. Just believe me, no matter what she responds afterwards, that the sovereignty is limited. And inside the military and political alliances, it's officially limited. The charters prescribe all prohibitions. And in practice, it's even stricter and more stringent. Nothing is permitted but for what is allowed. And who allows that? The leadership. And where is the leadership? Far away. So globally, there are not many countries wielding sovereignty. And we've been daring our sovereignty, the fact that we have our sovereignty. We can enjoy that fully, but sovereignty is needed to defend our interests. It's not a toy. We needed to have our own development. India has their own sovereignty. They hold it and possess it. And I'll tell the Honorable Prime Minister, I never told him, although last night we had lengthy talks and a one-on-one dinner, but I want to tell him right now, we know the position of the Indian Prime Minister and the Indian leadership and the Indian state with respect to all the attempts to incline India to occupy a position that would be favorable to someone but not to the Indian people against Russia. India, basing on their own sovereignty and the character of their leader and the national interests, is not led astray by those requirements and those who give this advice. But there are not so many countries like India worldwide. This is true, and we must be aware of that. India is one of such countries. China may be cited as another example. There are some other countries, not numerous, though. And if such attempts to guide someone, to dictate their will to someone from inside or outside the country will continue, they will be detrimental to international affairs. But I reiterate in closing this response, this should come to an end sooner or later.
So the reason, one of the reasons the question is relevant is because the United States views this as a matter of its national sovereignty, and as does the UK, as does Germany, as does France, and so it keeps coming up over and over. And what they say in response to the question of where is the proof is that this type of disinformation campaign is intentionally difficult to find hardcore proof of. It's other factors. And what the experts say is that this couldn't have been faked, that it's not one factor, that it's 100 factors that point to Russia. They say it's the forensics, it's the digital fingerprints, it's the IP addresses, the malware, the encryption keys, the specific pieces of code, that all of them point to Russia, and none of them points to anyone other than Russia.
What fingerprints, or hooves prints, or horn prints? What are you talking about? IP addresses, they can be invented. You know, there are very many specialists that can be invent or fix it up. You know, a kid of yours can send it. Your girl, that is 3-year-old, can perpetrate such an attack. And they present it like this, they can pass it off like this, and these specialists can invent anything, and then they will blame someone else. These are not proofs, these are trying to shirk responsibility, and we don't have the problem. The problem is inside the American policy. The Trump team has turned to be more efficient during the electoral campaign. Sometimes I thought that, well, he overkills, I thought sometimes during the campaign. But it turned out that he was right. He's been able to find approach and to reach out to those electors whom he hoped for, and they voted for him. And the other team, they made a mistake, and they don't want to recognize this mistake right now. They don't want to say that they were not wise enough. It's easy to say it's not our fault. It's the Russians. They intervened. They interfered. It's like anti-Semitism. The Jews are to blame. You are an idiot because the Jews are to blame, right? And you know what such moods lead to? They will not end up in nothing good. One should work and think how to rectify things. And you have mentioned disinformation. What is information? One of the stove piping facts by hackers is that one of the leaks by hackers is that the head of Madam Clinton's electoral office was not behaving properly against with respect to other candidates of the Democratic Party. But then, when that appeared in public, she acknowledged it was true and she handed in her resignation. So that was a truthful fact. And who was the author of the leak? Does not matter. It is important to have a look at that, consider that, apologize to people and say that we'll never ever do that again. But what did they do instead? They said it's not our blame. It's the Russians. Were the Russians dealing with all that, trying to rush one of the candidates of the Democratic Party in prejudice of someone else? It was in between themselves. Just stop that, please.
Even President Trump has said now that he believes Russia did it. So it's not just people who don't want President Trump in the office. And the difference between the hacking and the disinformation is real.
Oh, come on. Once again.
This is the conclusion of the 17 U.S. intelligence agencies and the others.
Американские агентства, 17 агентств в области безопасности говорят.
Hacked into the Democratic National Committee and hacked into Hillary Clinton's campaign emails, but that they also perpetuated a campaign of disinformation that involved putting out fake news stories through Russian-controlled entities like RT and Sputnik. And that those then were pushed by aggregators and what they're called bots on Twitter and elsewhere, and specifically targeted at voters who were potentially pro-Trump, voters in the Rust Belt of America, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, who were potentially gettable for Trump. And that is the conclusion that they have reached.
All of us should take the American mass media's role model, you know. Megan has been demonstrating today high class in her profession. Because I have just cited an example that points out that there was no disinformation, no matter who was behind that leak about the Democratic Party. And the fact is that that director handed in her resignation. Once again, she says it's about disinformation. What kind of disinformation? I can't see any manifestation thereof. I don't know that. And what President Trump has been saying, just show me the quote. He won, he said, because of the Russian intervention. I don't remember him saying so.
He finally came around to saying, I think Russia did it, and he said, I don't think he'll do it again.
Well, you see, it seems it's a very, very serious question of world politics, and this is an impression or what seems to you that you're talking about. This is not just as simple as holding an interview or writing an article in a newspaper. As for the interference, look at what your colleagues are doing in our country. They have been deep down in our domestic policies, doing what they weren't enjoying themselves on a systemic basis. For many years, they've been unceremoniously, grossly interfering within our domestic affairs at the level of diplomatic embassies. This has to stop.
That was Russia's President Vladimir Putin, through a translator, speaking with NBC's Megyn Kelly at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum last week. Kelly also asked Putin and other world leaders assembled at the forum, including India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, about issues such as climate change and the decision by U.S. President Trump to withdraw from the Paris Accord.
Yesterday, as you gentlemen know, President Trump announced that the United States would withdraw from the Paris climate deal, saying that it will hurt the United States economy and it'll cost jobs. European leaders were quick to react, accusing President Trump of shirking America's role as a global leader. President Putin, how do you see it?
While I'm not amongst the European leaders, at least the European leaders do not believe me to be that. But, of course, I mean, we, Russia, do have our own view. And by the way, did you yourself read through those Paris Accords? You did not. Well, I see that. But generally speaking, the Paris Treaty is a very proper good document which is aimed at resolving one of the global problems of the current times. In order to deter the climatic changes, now the issue is whether we are in a position to not allow climate to change. So it's about not letting the climate temperature go down by 2 degrees, but we don't feel here that the temperature is growing hotter. And I should say that we should be grateful to President Trump, because today in Moscow I hear they're saying that it snowed. You know, it's raining here, it's very cold, so now we can blame him for that and American imperialism. That's, you know, it's all their fault. But we're not going to be doing this. But if we are to look at what the Paris Accords are, this is the framework document, and whatever you read in the Paris Accords, it is left with the national government to make decisions. There is nothing obligatory, compulsory. All the countries make up their own minds, and the United States took on the obligation, I believe, to reduce by 26-28% the emissions into the environment by 2025, while Russia took on an obligation to achieve the 70% level of emissions compared to 1990 level, but by 2030. Now, the United States, to the extent I remember, ratified that treaty. We haven't yet done so. But we didn't do so because we want to wait and see until the rules are set forth the way the resources are to be allocated and other purely technical but very important things. So the United States took on an obligation to contribute $100 million into the Climate Foundation, which is going to be allocated to the emerging countries in their local environmental programs. But how this money is to be made available, to which institutions, who will dispose of them, so far these issues haven't been resolved. So where I'm coming from is that in order to reduce emission by 26-28% by 2025, and this future is already near, seemingly one has to introduce a great modernization of industry. You need to bring businesses forward to invest billions of dollars into the economy. But there is another side to this coin. One ought to think about what one should do with the labor which will be displaced out of the current production system. They need to be found in new employment, and so one has to think about it in advance and also invest respective resources if we do not want them to be abandoned and go beyond the poverty level. Because you asked me about the people who live with low incomes in Russia, and by the way, as of 2000, we had 40% which live below the poverty line. We reduce that almost twice by right now. I mean, there is a certain fluctuation because of the current day crisis, but nevertheless, we've managed to do that. So one also has to think, the United States, what one will do with those who will become jobless, because this is an additional resource. Therefore, I wouldn't judge President Trump, because President Obama made a respective decision. Maybe the acting president didn't believe that they were well thrown out. Maybe he thinks that there is not sufficient resource available. So this really requires very thorough consideration. But to my mind, one could as well stay inside the Paris Accord, because they are of framework nature. But effectively, what one could do is to alter the United States obligations within the Paris Accord. But you cannot wind back. Whatever was said was said. And so you have to think about what to do next and to do in the future. You certainly should not abandon the problem, but to the extent I know, I am not familiar with the text of the President Trump's statement, but I think he stated that he wanted to reconsider this treaty or sign a new one instead, because he's not giving up on working on this problem. And so it seems to me that one shouldn't be creating noise about it, but rather create terms and conditions for a joint effort to be undertaken, because where such big countries who are big emitters are not going to be doing any work, then no kind of a workable treaty will be reached or signed. So you have to act on what there is and do something positive in order to make this whole work constructive.
Kelly posed the question to Prime Minister Modi.
You've said that to not take action on climate change would be criminal. Is that your message for President Trump?
I think, you know, many people know how to make hot news out of everything. I think that's what people want to do, is sensationalize everything. I would put it very simply. I'm simply talking about the aspirations or the dream that New India has for itself. That is one thing. The second thing I would like to mention is that I have mentioned about the Vedas, which are the knowledge bank of India, about 5,000 years ago. I wasn't born then, by the way, and in which it was mentioned that human beings, a man, should, it's okay to milk nature. We have the right to milk nature. However, we do not have the right to exploit nature. This is what our Vedas say 5,000 years ago. I have only mentioned what has been mentioned 5,000 years ago. Number two, just 3 years ago in Germany, somebody asked me the same question. And of course, we did not have any statement from anyone at that time. And in Germany, I mentioned that whether there is Paris Accord or no Paris Accord, we are convinced that, and that is part of our cultural tradition, that we must not steal something that rightfully belongs to the next generation. We have to make sure that we must leave behind a beautiful, bountiful nature for our future generations so that they can live peacefully, they can breathe fresh air, and live a good life. This is a fundamental concern of India from ancient times. And I have used that example in Germany. I use the same example today.
But if I may, President Trump might agree with that. But the question is whether it's going to cost so many jobs and hurt America so much economically that right now it's not the best move for us. That's his position. It's caused outrage by other leaders. Where do you fall on it? Which side do you fall on?
I do not think that this subject, in fact, it's not a question of taking sides. This is not the subject. What I'm talking about is thinking for the future generation, the generation that's not even born today. That the generation or the people who are to be born in the next years, that's the side I'm on.
And by the way, this accord, it hasn't yet come into effect. It is supposed to come into effect as of 2021. So we still have time. We are all constructive in what we do. There are things that we can agree on.
Also on the dais was Austria's Chancellor, Christian Kern. Kelly posed the following question to Austria's Chancellor.
This week, German Chancellor Angela Merkel said publicly, including once to you, Prime Minister Modi, that Europe must take its fate into its own hands. The German Foreign Minister accused President Trump of putting the EU at risk, but Mr. Trump says that European NATO members must pay their fair share. Let me start with you on this, Chancellor Kern. Do you agree with Angela Merkel's comments?
Ja, ich denke, dass sie da recht hat und dass wir natürlich, was wir natürlich.
We will see, because we feel it for the first time that we're currently dealing with the American president, and he wants to act in such a way so that the European interests are weakened, which will bring big dividends out of it. So I guess Europe can make the following conclusions out of it. There are certain things that we have overlooked. Maybe there are quite a few of such things, and that applies to a whole set of security issues. That applies to the environmental protection and climate change. We are a strong economic entity. We are the biggest economic environment in the world, and we certainly need to make a step forward. And Mr. Putin, like you said, undoubtedly it is proper to pay attention to climate change, and so the Paris Accord is very important in this way. But what I'm afraid of is that if United States steps out of this story, that is going to be a step into the past, and that won't facilitate the future development of mankind. And so we need to ask ourselves the questions: are we going to ensure prosperity and wealth to our future generations? And so this major leaps of growth, are we able to sustain that? A steam engine was invented some time ago. Computers and internet, these are the kind of leaps I'm referring to, and certainly the technologies in the area of environmental protections and other innovations that will change around the whole business model, and there will appear new stories, new topics, which we will be looking at in order to provide for the stable global development. So whenever I think whether this will fall apart or not, and what will happen in Europe, many who are following this track are looking at the kind of steps that are being made, whether they would undermine the efforts being taken, how one could and should manage the capital flow. And this is very important to see that we want to support the social development with investment. And if America comes and will tell us, I'm not going to be playing this game, maybe this is not the most decisive thing, but this is definitely the reason for us to start thinking, because we do need stable development. We need to be able to take off, but with the kind of wings which we will be in a position to rely upon. And so one should act on an assumption so as not to follow the lead of America, but also think about one's own development in all dimensions.
President Putin, does all over NATO help Russia?
President Putin, вот эти все склоки вокруг.
Ссоры вокруг НАТО?
Squabbles around NATO, do they help Russia? Well, in a sense that maybe they should completely be falling apart, then that will help. But we don't see that falling apart just yet. Well, it's been more than once that I asked myself a question and raised it publicly, because NATO was established as a Cold War instrument in a fight against the Soviet Union and the so-called Warsaw Pact. There's no longer any Warsaw Pact nor Soviet Union, but NATO is still there. Now, the question is, what for? And there is only one kind of answer, no matter whatever says. This is the instrument of the U.S. foreign policy. And if somebody likes it, all right, that's the way it should be. But most importantly is that for the processes that NATO has always been talking about, transformation of that treaty into a political organization, as the kind of an organization which creates the elements of stability in the world. If that is the case, this is all right. But so far, it doesn't happen that way. So far, we are seeing the way the military infrastructure is expanding and nearing our borders. And this is something which cannot but concern us. And this is something that we are stating and speaking about publicly. Now, in reference to the recent summit meeting, the United States demand from their allies to raise their military spending, and simultaneously is saying that NATO is not going to attack anybody. But if you're not intending to attack anybody, why should you increase your military spending? So this is something that we see as an additional issue. Therefore, you know, we did our best to establish constructive relations with this organization. Even we set up the Russia-NATO Council in Rome. But it all ceased to be, and effectively no longer is working, not because of us to blame, not because of our initiative, but the lack of such instruments of cooperation is bad because it doesn't give us an opportunity to constructively cooperate.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.